Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, the one and only Jason Whitlock. We talk about BLM Incorporated, tech companies, the riots, and so much more. Jason Whitlock is a courageous, brave, and outspoken Black American. An awesome guy. Really enjoyed having him on our program. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you'd like to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, it's tpusa.com. Jason Whitlock is here. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. With us today is Jason Whitlock, a journalist and a very outspoken and brave American that I've enjoyed some of his commentary recently. Jason, welcome to The Charlie Kirk Show.
Charlie, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So I've really been enjoying your remarks lately, especially on Tucker Carlson's show, when you've been talking about just the state of affairs in our country, and you compared BLM Incorporated to the KKK. I know that got a lot of headlines. Can you help unpack that for us? Because I think that's a good place to start.
Listen, I think if you understand the history of the KKK, and it was started shortly after the Emancipation Proclamation, after the Civil War, and it was the enforcement arm, basically, of the Democratic Party. It violently reminded people of their duty to support the Democratic Party and Democratic policies. The KKK was promoted racial division and disharmony. And I think if the KKK were still highly active today, it would be doing a lot of the same things as Black Lives Matter, promoting racial division, using race as a dividing issue, physically intimidating people, both white and Black, who don't support the Democratic Party and the ideals being promoted by the Democratic Party. You know, I had a lot of people respond back, oh, the KKK, they lynch people. And I'm like, well, hold on. We don't lynch people anymore. That, you know, America stood up against that, and it's just not feasible to do that anymore. So what tactics would the KKK be using if it were active today? Social media intimidation. The lynching of character assassination, harming people economically with violence, burning buildings and things like that. And so, you know, I'm going to write a piece further delving into the analogy and just trying to explain to people that tactics change, but goals don't. Mm. And so when I look at the goals of Black Lives Matter and the KKK, I see a lot of similarities, and I see tactics that I believe if the KKK were as powerful as it had been, you know, 100 years ago, they were using the same tactics that Black Lives Matter does today.
Including judging people just based on their skin color and their immutable characteristics. You know, Jason, I grew up in an America only about a decade ago. I know this will stun people, where the predominant kind of moral code that was taught in our high school was your skin color does not matter. Your character matters. And it kind of worked. I went to a pretty diverse high school. It was 53% English as a second language. You know, we had people from all across, you know, the world there literally represented. And, you know, kids would act immature at times, but all things being equal, it was a pretty decent place for people of all different backgrounds and skin colors to be able to, quote unquote, coexist and mature together. Now the high school is a complete disaster, right? I mean, everyone's now divided based on skin color. You have white privilege seminars, and you're focusing more on skin color more than actually character. And so can you talk about how troubling this is and quite honestly, it seems as if we're teaching young people to care more about the melanin content in people's, you know, in their skin than even their character or their values.
Yeah, I think that the political left has instructed Black people that our defining characteristic is, and most valuable characteristic is, our skin color. And I think there are a lot of Black people like myself who take pride in our skin color, but it is certainly not our most defining characteristic. It's not our most valuable characteristic. It's just the paint job God gave us, and we enjoy it. We're proud of it, but it does not define us. And again, what's going on today in telling Black people that, oh, you're a special category of human being, we're going to capitalize your skin color Black in newspapers and the media and the article and distinguish you from everybody else. That's like, hey, man, that's what they did 400 years ago. That's what racist slave owners and racist people did 400 years ago. And so, Charlie, I mean, you're pretty young. You know, I'm 53. And what I've witnessed in my lifetime, what I was born into in 1967, a year before Dr. King was assassinated, was what felt like to me in Indianapolis, Indiana. I was born into the era of hope and promise and living up to the ideas and the culture that Dr. King and that and people of faith created through the 1950s and 60s through the Civil Rights Movement, where I felt like I was born into a lot of hope and aspirations. And my parents told me that I could do and conquer and be anything I wanted to in America as long as I worked hard and stayed out of trouble. And now we've pivoted here in the last decade of my life where we're trying to convince kids, particularly Black kids, that you stand no chance here in America. Yeah. The whole thing is set up and rigged against you. How can you survive with all this racism out here? And I look back at my parents and what they overcame, what I saw them overcame. I look at the obstacles that were in the way when I was younger, and they've all been diminished significantly over the 53 years of my life. There's more opportunity to achieve here in America. People are still clamoring, Black people, brown people, yellow people, and I know Asians hate to be called yellow, God bless them, that they got the right mentality, but people are clamoring to get into America because of all the opportunity of all different colors. And we've got political people and organizations that are, systemic racism and America is the worst place on earth. And how can you be anything? And it all just blows my mind. Cause it's taken us it's like we're going backwards instead of forwards. And I say like we are going backwards instead of forward. For the first time, I believe, in American history, we're actually backing up rather than moving forward. It's a very sad time.
In our fast-paced world, it's tough to make reading a priority. At least it used to be. At thinker.org, thinkr.org, they summarize the key ideas from new and noteworthy nonfiction, giving you access to an entire library of great books in bite-sized form. Read or listen to hundreds of titles in a matter of minutes, from old classics like Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People to recent bestsellers like Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. I can tell you, Thinker is the way that I am able to distill a lot of information quickly. It's important to take a break from mindless social media scrolling and learn something. If you want to challenge your preconceptions, expand your horizons, and become a better thinker, go to thinkr.org to start a free trial today. Again, that's thinkr.org, thinker.org/Charlie. I can attest to that. We're just in the last 8 to 10 years, I've seen us make, you know, racial movements in the wrong direction, not progress, but almost regression. And we're talking about that more. And we're talking about just kind of people's skin color more than ever before than what matters. So I want to get into this as well, which is something you talked about on Tucker's show, which is that the Democrats and the left, they use the tactic of calling somebody a racist as a way to almost keep themselves in political power. That's the worst thing you could be called. in American society. And it's almost as if their entire party has now become a party of, we're the ones that if you agree with us, we won't call you the R word. Can you help us unpack that?
Yeah, I do believe it's the foundation of their political movement at the moment is if you don't want the hassle of being called racist, say you're a liberal or say That's you're a right. part of the Democratic Party, and you won't have to go through the burden of having to prove to the world that you're not racist. And it's a pretty powerful political strategy that they talk a lot about the Southern strategy of the Republican Party. And they have catapulted over that, leaped over it, come up with an even better strategy of, because listen, the typical American, whether black or white, doesn't want to have to go out into the world and defend themselves against the allegation that you're racist, particularly when virtually any action you take, they can deem racist. And so most people don't, they care about politics, but it's really a hassle. It's something they think about every 2 or 4 years. And if all I have to do is go pull that Democratic lever and no one can call me racist, it's worth it. That's like something I don't have to deal with. I can spend that energy now focusing on my kids, on my job, on my career. I've handled the whole. Whereas if you take on the mantle and Charlie, take someone like me who's never voted, but my views are consistently conservative. It's because of the way I was brought up in the church, is from my athletic background as a football player. Those are my values. Well, now, because I've been defined as conservative, now as a black person, oh my God, you're an awful time. You're a sellout. And I have to waste energy. No, no, I'm not. Here's what I actually believe. Here's what I think. Here's what I do. Go look at my resume of who I've worked with, who I've helped, blah, blah, blah. But if I would just say I'm a Democrat or a liberal, I wouldn't have to deal with any of that. It is a brilliant political strategy that's working for them. It's a burden to be a conservative. It's an even greater burden to be a Republican. A lot of people just want to live their lives and not have to deal with that burden. And so they go along with the bullying from the left.
Yeah, it's a really important take, and I totally agree. It's almost political extortion, where if you vote for us and you put the correct things in your social media bio, we will not engage with you right now. We'll go after the other people. And that does not allow freedom of speech. It doesn't allow dialogue. It doesn't allow different ideas. Instead, it basically demands conformity. It demands obedience. I sit down and obey because we're the good people and we have to go punish and destroy the bad people. And that's no way to run a country.
It destroys the truth, Charlie, because the truth generally comes from friction, debate, and the ideas and truth and facts are supposed to win out. But the way we hold debates now are, if the left doesn't like your opinion, if you say, well, hold on, man, you're saying the police are kind of actively going out and just killing black people randomly in just some kind of random, wild fashion. If you say, hey, the facts don't support that, and here are the actual numbers. Here's the number of white people killed by police. Here's the number of black people killed by police. Here's the number of engagements people have with the police based on the crime level in their zip codes. And it takes engagement in order for you to have a bad or a good engagement with, yep. with somebody. And so if you start pointing those things out, it's like, you're racist or you're an Uncle Tom, and discussion is over. And so the facts, let's remove them all. And it's just, we have an opinion that if you don't think the police are just out systematically killing black men, unarmed black men, and we must defund the police because of it, you're a racist. They have taken us off into a farcical world devoid of logic, reason, facts, common sense. We live in a social media fantasy land where they can make up the reality and the truth. It's a dangerous place for a country to try to operate.
That's correct. And so I guess one of the things that bothers me most is how, and you've gone through it, of how black conservatives or black freethinkers are treated by the left and the media. And there is anyone who dares talk about the idea of personal responsibility. Maybe it's a great country, and if you apply yourself correctly, you can succeed. It's almost as if you have to admit that the barriers are too much and we need massive social action and government intervention. You would think that the motivational speech, you would think that the idea that, well, look, there's problems, but if you work hard and play by the rules, you're able to succeed in this country. And it seems that all of these different incentives then kind of merge together into the, as you put it, the destruction of the pursuit of truth and also of freedom of speech. And I know you've covered sports for years, and I want to get into this because I think that there's a really interesting kind of wrinkle to this where I'm sure you've noticed this. Ever since Joe Biden became president, I watched the NFL playoffs yesterday. I didn't notice as much social justice, BLM incorporated stuff yesterday. I saw a couple little slogans here and there, but I didn't see the same sort of paid programming advertising. I didn't see Tony Romo having to kind of mention a thing here and there. We're back in September, if my memory serves me correctly, it was a lot of BLM incorporated kind of messaging and graphics. Did you see that the same way? And if so, is there a reason to that?
You're catching me a bit with my pants down because I watched the first game, Green Bay and Tampa Bay, at a bar across the street from me that a friend owns. And so I wasn't as in tune with the commercial breaks as I would be if I was watching at home. And I watched the second game not as closely because it turned into a blowout. And so I somewhat agree with you that there was less of it. I'll take you at your word, because I felt like all season there was a lot of it. They were cramming it down our throats. What transpired yesterday, I'm not as in tune with as I should be, just because of the way I watched those games was a bit different. Because normally I'm in tune with all of that. It's like it's bothered me all season. The Harry Edwards commercials about moving the chains and all this stuff, and it's just, it's been over the top how much they've tried to jam this down our throat.
Fair enough. And so another thing that has come to the news cycle in the last week is President Biden has signed an executive order allowing men who think they are women to compete in women's sports, the transgender in sports issue. Can you help unpack this in a way that a lot, we got a ton of emails on this, hundreds of emails where people say, Charlie, this is wrong. How do I best confront this? What's your take on this? I think this is one of the most egregious acts as far as going after female sports, probably in history.
It's something I truly just can't understand how we got here, other than to say that Jack Dorsey, who runs Twitter, founded Twitter, runs Twitter, has stated on the record that the purpose of Twitter is to amplify certain voices that they feel need to be amplified. And the transgender community, I think, has received the highest amplification by Twitter of any group. And Twitter controls American public discourse and political discourse. And Twitter's importance to political discourse is, I think people are starting to recognize it, but no one is starting to put the dots together and say, well, hold on, who is Jack Dorsey and why is Twitter in charge of American public discourse? Something this important. Did we elect Jack Dorsey? Did we vet him? Is he somehow so qualified to have this much say so on what we talk about here in America, and what are the ramifications of this? And so I don't want to denigrate the transgender community, but based off my research, it's a very small number of people who identify as an opposite sex and then want to live their lives as the opposite sex. let's be generous and say it's 1% of the American population. I don't believe it's that high, but let's say it is that high. For that 1% of the American population, do we upturn the lives of 51% of the population? Women who are perfectly fine being women and competing in sports and competing amongst each other? Do we really upturn this whole thing to satisfy a small segment, or is the better solution, well, let's compete a third category if necessary of transgender men who want to be women. You can compete in sports over here amongst yourselves. I don't know if we need to put our daughters through having to compete with biological men in their sports. We've spent a lot of effort developing women as athletes through Title IX. We're really going to upturn this whole thing because Jack Dorsey's social media platform has told us to, and we seem to be bowing. And Charlie, I've been saying this forever. There is too much power in Northern California, Silicon Valley, and where all these social media apps and all the preponderance, the most of their employees are coming from, living in Northern California, and those values, America's values and the whole point of view is being driven by Northern California. I don't think that's healthy.
49% of Americans say their top New Year's resolution is to save money in the next year. Well, let's check that box right now. When your family switches to Pure Talk from AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, you could save over $800 a year. That's real money every single month right back in your pocket. And you don't have to sacrifice coverage. Pure Talk is on the same network as one of the big carriers, but they charge you half. That's right, no gimmicks, no fluff added to your bills, which is why Pure Talk is the top-rated wireless company by Consumer Affairs. Right now, get unlimited talk, text, and 2 gigs of data for just $20 a month. And if you go over on data usage, they don't charge you for it. Grab your mobile phone, dial #250 and say Charlie Kirk. When you do, you'll save 50% off your first month. Again, dial #250 and just say Charlie Kirk. It's the secret password. Pure Talk is simply smarter wireless. I want to read from an article that you wrote on theblaze.com about Jack Dorsey, and you go a step further, and I'd love to have you help us unpack this. This was written, I believe, 2 weeks ago, and you say the following. You say, the people wagging their fingers the hardest at Trump and deplorables sanctioned finance and promoted political violence throughout all of 2020 and for most of the past decade. Ashley Babbitt's blood, who is the woman who died at the Capitol, is on the hands of Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg, as much as, if not more than, on President Trump's. That's why Dorsey and Zuckerberg rushed to silence Trump on their respective platforms, Twitter and Facebook. You wrote this on theblaze.com. I see it the same way with the kind of tech issue. And so can you help unpack how these social media companies do more than just silent speech? They're controlling our entire civilization.
We keep having this conversation about Parler, and look at the conversations you can have on Parler. We got to shut it down. It's inciting violence. No one ever looks at Twitter and Facebook and say, well, the lies that they promote incite violence as well. And I can argue it incites a more aggressive violence than anything we see on the right. And I know that the mainstream media and social media have done a great job of making everyone feel like January 6th was a reenactment of Pearl Harbor or 9/11. I've watched a lot of video from that. And in terms of violence, it doesn't remotely compare to anything we saw over the summer. The burning of buildings, the looting of property, the death toll for police officers and other citizens, the things we see on a nightly basis in Portland and Seattle, the things we saw on the streets of Kenosha, New York, to this day going on in New York, Minneapolis, Atlanta, all over this lie that's been promoted on Facebook and Twitter and every other Silicon Valley social media app that the police are just out here randomly killing black men. And we've had celebrities, as the violence is going on, as buildings are burning, as stores are being looted, as violence is taking place, we've had celebrities and a future vice president offering to pay the bail of the rioters and looters. And no one has said, hey, all of that was irresponsible. As LeBron James basically gassed people up to commit violence in reaction to George Floyd and Rayshard Brooks and Ahmaud Arbery and all, no one's saying a word. No, Twitter's not taking any action. No one's saying, hey, David Dorn's death, the 77-year-old retired black police officer that was assassinated, no one's saying that his death is on the hands of the people, the platforms or the people that basically promoted this kind of violence. Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg, I'm telling you, they're probably well-intentioned. But, you know, some cliches are true. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. And these men have way too much unchecked power.
And they seemingly are now not just in power and in control of their companies, is as if the government will do whatever they want them to do. Investigate
their...
They
paid off our elected officials. There's no question about it.
That's right. And so I want to talk to you about faith as well, Jason. This is something I've heard you talk about before. A lot of our listeners are people of faith, and especially in times like this. Can you talk about your faith and how important it is, you know, in these, you know, very unpredictable times?
I think my values are driven by faith. My point of view is driven by faith. My actions that are positive are driven by faith. My actions that aren't so positive or my failings. But listen, I think that my America is clearly becoming a secular nation. And we are paying an enormous toll for turning away from values that reflect the will of God. And we will not be a superpower as a secular nation. We will be doing the bidding of China and others if we go down this path of continuing to abandon our religious principles and ideas. And it's as an African American, it's baffling to me. Our journey as Black people here in America has been defined by faith and the hope and optimism, courage that faith provides. And we have tossed all of our much of our faith aside in the name of politics. And Charlie, that is where I disconnect with most people is that I just think there's way too much focus on politics. And I get it now in this moment where we were watching with our own eyes in real time our democracy and republic fall apart. I get why people have a passion for politics, but it just reinforces in my mind that I have to try my best to serve God and keep that at the focus and center of my life. Because if I look at this other stuff, I'm going to go crazy. I'm going to lose my hope and optimism, and I'm going to lose the principles and the point of views that have served me well. And so I just ask people, people in my family, people that disagree with me that I'm close to, just ask yourself the things that you're supporting, do they conflict, contradict? Are they consistent with your alleged religious views? And if they're not consistent, maybe you should ask yourself why. And start looking for allies who share your religious beliefs first rather than allies who share your political beliefs first. You would be amazed who would be your allies if you just say, does that person believe in God? and let that be the driving force rather than does that person believe we should all have health insurance? It's because the health insurance deal that, you know, I can go either way on. The God thing is again, I'm friends with atheists. There's no people I love, you know, close to. But I probably have a bit more respect for those who believe in God. It's about humility. I realize how limited I am and how unlimited the wisdom and vision of a higher power God is. And so I look at the world and I look at people on this extreme left who they're establishing themselves as God. They are the judge and jury of who's good and bad. And they are the ultimate solution to every problem. And I just don't believe I'm smart enough. And so I want the collective wisdom that's found in the Bible, thousands of years of collective wisdom. I want that to play a significant role in my life. And you know, without it, the country's going to dissolve. It was, you know, everybody keeps coming up with these names of movements. I hope someone watches this. And I wish that someone would just come call their group One Nation. Because I think that says it all. Because the next words are under God. You don't have to say the under God, but it's just implied and it's understood. Start a group. Someone said Trump's going to start a political party and maybe call it the Patriot Party. Just call it One Nation. If One Nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That we need to get back to that.
Amen. All right, before I let you go, you tweeted something that I want you to explain, where you said, no way is Brady going to win in the Super Bowl. I'm a big Brady fan. What he was able to do is pretty amazing. Even being a Brady fan, I thought him going to Tampa Bay, it's kind of weird. No way he'll be able to put the team together. You know, all these different pieces. Rather incredible. Winning on the road in New Orleans, winning on the road in Green Bay. Tell me why you think Kansas City's going to repeat.
Well, Kansas City's the best team in football right now, and they got the best quarterback and I think the best coach going right now. And that's no slight. What Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. He's right there with Michael Jordan and Babe Ruth and whoever else you think the greatest of their sports is. But the guy's 43. Patrick Mahomes is 24, 25 years old. He's in the prime of his career. He's got all the weapons and pieces. You know, something incredible will have to happen. And look, I'm a Chiefs fan. I worked in Kansas City for 16 years. I'm friendly with Andy Reid and Brett Veach, the general manager of the Chiefs. So I have a bias. I will not be disappointed, though, if Tom Brady wins another Super Bowl. What a testament to his character and what, you know, he will have proven. It's not the system. It's not Bill Belichick. He's already proven that just by making it to a Super Bowl. But if he got a Super Bowl, that would be the final thing on his legacy. And hell, he'll probably come back next year and do it again anyway.
It's pretty amazing. Tom Brady is basically an assistant coach. He's like the offensive coordinator and the quarterback. And everyone else is just kind of managing the pieces. But Jason, thank you so much for joining us. How can people follow you or support what you're doing?
You can follow me on Jack Dorsey's favorite platform, Twitter, at Whitlock Jason, and stay tuned. I'll have news on what's next for me, hopefully sooner than later.
Very good. Well, Jason, come back soon. Thanks so much. And, I hope you're wrong about the Super Bowl, but I'm a Mahomes fan too. So we'll see what happens.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your questions as always. With any of your comments or concerns, if you want to subscribe to The Charlie Kirk Show, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider and hit subscribe. If you want to support us, it's charliekirk.com/support. That support keeps the engine running and going. God bless you guys. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon.